from the HRC.
Convene the June 2nd, 2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Welcome to everyone. We're going to have a very interesting informational hearing today, but before we do that, we have a couple of bills that the Senate sent over to us that we hope to get out of here and onto the House floor. With that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 881. Mr. Gallagher?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 881 provides that Cannabis sativa seed, not intended for planted but remaining capable of germination, is agricultural hemp seed. It includes seed processed in a manner or to the extent rendering seed incapable of germination in the definition of industrial hemp, and it provides that the handling of seeds or seed products processed in a manner or to the extent of being incapable of germination does not require agricultural hemp seed an agricultural hemp seed production permit.
So, colleagues, I think we're remembering back, we're trying to keep the industrial stuff away from the good stuff so that they don't cross-pollinate or whatever, and
that would be a catastrophe.
Yes.
And
true.
Next session, we're going to keep the scotch away from the bourbon. So.
Oh, good. I was worried about that.
Are there any questions, comments, discussion on this bill before I recognize Vice Chair Krieger? I'm not seeing any. Vice Chair Krieger?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 881 to the floor with a due pass.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves Senate Bill 881 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? I'm seeing none. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barreto?
No.
Representative Escobel?
Aye.
Representative Frederick?
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative McEwen?
Excused.
Representative Whitsett?
No.
Vice Chair McLean?
Yes.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Whit?
Aye. Having received the required majority, the motion passes. I'll carry that bill. I wasn't going to ask anybody else for something that I wouldn't do myself.
So. I'll volunteer to provide questions.
Okay.
Cross-examination.
Oh, boy. Up in smoke on this one. All right. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 881 and open a work session. Just for the record, folks, this bill was sent over to us from the Senate. Just keep that in mind. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 361A. Mr. Gallagher, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 361A requires that the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, also known as DOGAMI, provide notice to local jurisdiction and opportunity for local jurisdictions to request DOGAMI to delay a decision on an operating permit and on a reclamation plan. And it requires DOGAMI to give local jurisdiction notice and opportunity to provide comments prior to issuing the operating permit or reclamation plan if the local jurisdiction does not request a delay. It requires DOGAMI to give certain information about proposed operating permit and reclamation plan to the local jurisdiction, and it applies to operating permits applied for on or after the effective date of the act.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Committee members, you will remember that in plain English, this bill was essentially trying to encourage additional discussion when they're trying to reopen some of these existing mines.
Yeah.
Any discussions, any questions? Yes, Vice Chair McLean.
I think that the title, you know, doesn't really reflect what we discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we discussed was simply notification and
more communication
to make sure that folks are aware of what's going on and that everything has been, you know, processed. And we're not trying to delay anything. We're simply trying to make sure that we're adding good communication between everyone, all jurisdictions, and the public.
Thank you very, very much. Representative Gorsuch?
Yeah, in terms of this bill, I'm just a little concerned that we may be simply scratching the surface.
Oh.
A much deeper topic.
Could someone get a hook out of that?
Please.
Just dig Representative Frederick, that, this is a special
digging
thing.
Digging a little deeper, Representative. Exactly. Representative Whitsitt.
I just want to establish also, like Representative McLean, that this is not delaying, that legislative intent is not to delay any permitting. We heard a little something different right there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And that would be my understanding as well. Going forward, anything further, committee members? Very good. With that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krieger.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 361A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Krieger moves Senate Bill 361A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, hearing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Moreno.
Aye.
Representative Escobar.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Excused.
Representative Whitsett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McLean.
Aye.
Chair Whit.
Aye. Having received the required majority, the motion passes. And Representative Gorsuch will be carrying that bill. Very good. I'm going to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to volunteer.
You're absolutely welcome. There's a price for everything, sir. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 361A. And I am going to open the main event today, the informational hearing on our Hatchery Research Center. And folks, I just want to make the comment that as things stand now, the funding for the Hatchery Research Center is in question. I have been told by leadership that it is important that we fund this facility, and I know that Vice Chair Krieger and I have been working and will continue to work to make sure that we receive adequate funding for this research center, which is known to be one of the premier research centers for fisheries in the entire world. And were we to lose either the hatchery or its capacity to be able to deal with some of the critical issues in fisheries, then shame on us for allowing that to happen. My editorial, I realize, but this is absolutely critical, and I am so pleased that Vice Chair Krieger has taken it upon himself to make possible this information hearing today. With that,
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative Gorsuch, please.
Is there anything specific that other committee members can do in supporting your efforts to get adequate funding?
Thank you, sir. I think it is critically important to let the folks in Ways and Means know about how important this Hatchery Research Center is. Okay. I think it's very important to let leadership know that. And I think, too, to the extent that any one of us maybe has a newsletter or those sorts of things, I think letting the general public know the quality facility that we have, the quality leadership that we have running that facility, and how critically important this is to fisheries would be exceedingly helpful. We need some general buzz out in the public. And Vice Chair Krieger, this might be a good time to mention the comparison with what's going on in Washington State as opposed to Oregon.
Yeah, well, we got a little flyer which you was put on your table here, or on your desk, from Washington, where they have been challenged and basically don't have the science or the information they need to scientifically support their hatchery system because of lack of what we used to think of just basic information that you think we would know about salmon and genetics and behavioral and whether things are hatchery fish are less productive. And the vision, the envision of the Salmon Research Center and the people we've got working there, the relationship between wild and hatchery is going to be one of the things they're going to look at, and what might be causing hatchery fish to be less productive. And that's probably the main question. And they've got 7 projects, I believe, online that over time will help us understand how to manage hatchery fish so they are more compatible, hatchery fish with wild fish. And if we can get to that point, then we can talk to the wild fish advocates, I think, on a more even base and make sure that we are, in fact, protecting wild fish, because we also need to make sure that we do that. There's a huge value in those.
Right.
So I'm interested to see where we are, what's going to move forward, and hope that you all support it when you talk to your other members of your caucus about the need to make sure we fund the center.
Thank you very much. And if we're going to go forward with a lot of these issues, we need to be basing our decisions on sound science, good science, some of the best science that's out there, and this is how we get that sort of thing. Representative Whitsitt.
Yes, I would like someone to clarify for us again regarding the $1.6 million of swept funds that were regarding hatcheries that are going into the Fish and Wildlife General Fund. It's a bill that we have coming up on the floor, it's my understanding.
Okay.
And if somebody could explain to me why that money isn't going into the hatchery fund here to help fund this instead of going into the general budget of Fish and Wildlife. And maybe I'm confused, but I believe we have a bill coming up. I think it was second read yesterday. And
do you want to answer?
Just a little today.
Okay. I can't recall, Mr. Chair, the exact bill number. I understand what's going on there. But there might be able to say that that dollars are going to be within the general fund or the general budget of the department. But that would not provide certainty for long-term funding, where 3012 does that for 10 years before the sun sets there. So I would not want them to use that money for the research center unless they took part of it for bridge funding. But we're going to talk about the need for bridge funding and geneticists and all that from our presenters today.
Okay. Anyone else?
I just one last thing.
Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
I don't want to sound melodramatic, but it is shocking to me when you consider how important fish are to this state, both wild and hatchery, that this is not a priority. And we need to do everything we can to make it a priority, because this is, it's just hard to believe.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that very much. And again, thanks to Vice Chair Krieger for taking the first step in making this a priority with today's hearing. I appreciate everyone's sentiments. And with that, I'm going to call forward, please, Cam Perry, Scott Starkey, and Lindsay Ball. Gentlemen, I want to welcome you to our committee. I want to thank you for the absolutely tremendous work that you're doing, not only for the Research Center, but for the state of Oregon. And the marked contrast of what's going on or about to go on, continue to go on here in Oregon, as opposed to some of the tragic stories we hear about Washington State. Thank you for your appearance, and please decide among yourselves your order of testimony.
Well, thank you so very much, Chairman Witt. It's an honor to be here. Vice Chair Krieger, Vice Chair McClain, respected members of the committee. Thank you so much for also mentioning what's going on up in Washington, Vice Chair Krieger, because that's kind of the ghost of Christmas to come if we don't complete the research path that we're on right now. Just returned from British Columbia. And British Columbia, who has some of the finest fisheries in the world, is facing many of the same problems that we are in other states. And unfortunately, their provincial government and their federal government can't agree with their fisheries entities, and this research is not being done up there, and they're going to be facing some horrendous problems, much like the people in Washington are right now, being reduced to distributing flyers to try to save their fishery. And that's not what Oregon's about. That's not what we're here to talk about.
Who is that gentleman?
We think his last name's Perry, but we're not sure. He's going to introduce himself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Jerry Gilliam, and I hail from this gentleman's district. So it's all his fault. Anyway, I want to thank my co-chairs for being here. I truly feel Lindsay and Scott we serve as three co-chairs, not chairman and vice chair, because the work these gentlemen do is amazing to me every day, and they have a way of being able to be all over the state and talk to people about the work we're doing. This board is incredibly diverse. I think one of the first questions we were asked when we first formed was, my gosh, with all this diversity and this difference of opinion, how in the world could this board ever function? But you know, that's become our strongest suit, because with all the differing opinions on this board and the different thoughts, when we vet something and we come up with a decision, it's a good decision because it's been worked out. One of the first things we wanted to do was to really sit and take a hard look at where we were going with our research as a state to protect our fisheries. Because to a man, there's not a person on this board who's not a fierce advocate of wild fish, but who also realizes the incredible value that hatchery fish represent to this state. And we really spent our first work sessions putting together a business plan, sort of a blueprint for the future, you know, because there's thousands of places you can go with salmon research. But what can we do that's going to be the most meaningful to our state, to these fish, to protect our wild fish, and to continue our hatchery inputs? And that was really our first plan of business, was to put a long-term plan together, a 10-year plan, if you will, that would get us to where we needed to be as far as our fisheries, and put these visionary goals in place. One of the amazing things to me is that our science is finally at the place where we need it to be. We've had years and years in fisheries where there's so much we wanted to know. Dr. Willis Rich started out back in 1939 with Oregon's first division of fisheries, and he funded it out of his own pocket back then. Oh. And he brought all his information that he had worked on in Alaska and Stanford to Oregon because he felt it was the best place to do the work. In 1939, Willis Rich felt this state was the most progressive out of all of them, and that's why he ended up here. And I don't think any of that's changed. He would be dazzled if he knew where we were right now. So what we did was we put together a plan to answer a specific set of questions. We looked at three distinct areas that we thought were going to be the most important to preserve our fisheries. And that includes mate selection, differences caused by hatchery rearing, and imprinting and homing, which my two colleagues are going to explain a little bit about. We knew when we put this business plan together that we couldn't rest as a status quo. That's what other states are doing. They're saying, let's try and preserve just what we have left. Let's hold on to a little bit of it. And we all know where that leads. It's just a rapid depreciation, because you really don't end up holding on to anything. One of my dear friends, who I had the honor of serving as a county commissioner with for a while, is a farmer and rancher. And he used to say, if we stand pat, we end up eating our seed corn. And I don't think there's any better description about what could happen to us. And our plan also isn't laboratory based. Our plan takes this research out and it puts it in the field. It puts it on the rivers so we can see exactly what's happening with fish. So we can see if what our theories are correct. If we can bring more of these fish back, if we can improve olfactory imprinting, if we can not foul up a fish's GPS that he's born with, which is fascinating to me. I mean, learning about these fish every day, it's just an absolute delight that they're born with an internal GPS. As soon as they out-migrate from that egg, they lock into the Earth's magnetic poles, and that's what's going to help guide them on their quest out in the ocean. And if we have too much metal in a hatchery, too much rebar and cement, or we carry those eggs in metal trays, we can foul up that GPS and send them somewhere else. So it's wonderful with all the genome science too that we can finally unravel these secrets and figure out what's the most important way to propagate fish to give them resilience and give them more vigor. We've kind of taken that out of the picture, because typically for years and years we take the biggest male and the biggest female and say, my gosh, we're good to go, let's breed these fish. But maybe that little salmon, that 6 or 7 or 8 pound male, is going to be the more vigorous and the more resilient. And if we can find those genetic markers, which is what we're going to do, we're going to find a much better way to breed fish that have a better opportunity to survive in the ocean and return to our rivers. The other thing that's so important that we touched on this morning is the economic values to the state of Oregon. We only have one river that's been thoroughly studied for economic values, and that was the Echo Northwest study that was done on the Rogue River. So one single system. If you take all the salmon values in that system on an annual basis and you add them up, they equate to $1.5 billion worth of economic value for the state of Oregon annually. That's dazzling to me. If you multiply that out across the state and then you throw in our most prolific fishery, the Columbia, you can imagine what that means to us. You know, mom and pop businesses, charter captains, scientists, ranchers, farmers. One of the things we're working on right now is to get a true salmon calculator so that we know as a state exactly what these fish mean to us, because that's kind of been an unknown quantity. We have a sport calculator. We want to know what a salmon's worth when he's sport caught. We have a commercial calculator. We know what that salmon's worth at market. But we don't have a calculator that takes in all the elements. So what that salmon means in terms of water quality, in terms of saved farm and ranch land, in terms of passive value, in terms of active value. So we're working with NOAA right now and Dr. Stephanie Swift of the National Wildlife Research Center and the Freshwater Trust. And Dr. Swift is probably the world's foremost resource economist and researcher in the world, and we're going to have a true value calculator that's going to focus on Representative Krieger's district, because we felt that was the first part of Oregon that we could get our arms around. So it basically will go from the California border up to Coos Bay, and it'll give us our first template for the state to know what these salmon are worth to us. And then that will answer an awful lot of questions when people go, my gosh, where is my money going? What does my money mean when I spend this money? The other thing that we're able to do through OHRC is support the department, who has been so tremendous. You know, I can't say enough about our science team led by Dr. Noakes and our department staff that's led by Bruce McIntosh, because they've worked so hard with us to develop this business plan, and maybe a business plan focusing science research into a business plan may have been a new way to go. But a lot of us kind of, this was a grassroots effort in how we do this. And most of us have a business background. We love these fish, but we're also results oriented. So how do we work this so we have benchmarks, reporting, accountability, and get to the answers we need in this science? And that's what we've worked out. And this science also helps ODFW comply with some of their most important mandates, which is our hatchery management policy and our native fish conservation policy. The other thing that's so important, you talked about funding earlier, and the reason why this has to be dedicated funding is because you can't determine what you need from a single run of fish. It just won't give you all the right answers. Could be anomaly, could be right spot on the first time out. But if you can do three or four runs of fish and study them and apply this research, then we know we're going to get the right answers to protect our wild fish and continue our hatchery inputs. If this funding is hooked up to the variables of departmental funding or general fund funding, it'll go like this. One year we'll be able to do it, the next year we won't. If we have to rely on grants, it's going to be based on what the grant maker wants. We're going to have to try and wheedle in what we need in that. We can't do that. We have to be directed and we have to be focused. And dedicating funding will help us do that. Probably one of my all-time favorite Oregon governors used to say, Oregon is a grand lady who adamantly protects what's important to her. And that, of course, was Tom McCall. And I hear his voice resonating through everything we do at OHRC, everything this committee does. I think that's our focus, because Oregon has never been a follower. Oregon has been an absolute leader and kind of a rugged individualist leader. And that's what it takes to lead the world in science research. When we save these fish for us, we're not just saving them for Oregon. We are saving them for the entire West, because this research will be applicable across the board. And these fish don't know any boundaries when they migrate. And that's why it's so important for us to continue this. I have an opportunity by able to work with these gentlemen and Dr. Noakes and Bruce McIntosh and, of course, our wonderful new director, Kurt, to meet people from all over the world that come to OHRC. Recently, we hosted some scientists from Pakistan who wanted to see our fisheries research. And the thing that was amazing to me was they said, we desperately need this research in Pakistan on our rivers. But unfortunately, our government is run by the Russian mafia, and we can't get a dollar out of that government to save fish that are so vital to our economy. So I look at what we have here, best country in the world, best state in the United States. Everybody who feels if we just roll up our sleeves, we can solve a problem. And that's what we're doing with the best people on earth, with the support of this committee, with the support of the legislature. We're going to solve these problems. And now I'd like to turn it over to Scott, and he's going to tell you a little bit about our science plan.
Scott, before you start, and let me interrupt, if you would, please, just for a moment. We have several committee members who have to go to other committees to testify on various bills. When we start losing some committee members, it's not because there's a lack of interest. It's because we got some very busy committee members this morning. So please understand. And Cam, is always your enthusiasm is palpable. I want to thank you very much for that. Scott, great to see you here this morning.
Please forgive me if I repeat some of the things that Cam has covered, because he's been stuck in the boonies up in British Columbia and not communicating, so we're not really too well coordinated. Yes, my name is Scott Starkey, and I'm vice chair. Give you a little bit of background. I've got a degree from Purdue University in forest management with a minor kind of fish and wildlife, but I did have a son that was a student at OSU in fish and wildlife, so we're connected out here, too. I spent a tour in the Army and was an officer there in Vietnam. And I worked 43 years in the forest products industry with Weyerhaeuser and Campbell and Menasha. I lived, when I was working with Weyerhaeuser, I spent 4 years 3 miles north of the equator in Borneo running a logging camp there. And with Weyerhaeuser, I made 18 different trips to Japan and log marketing. And with Menasha, spent some time in Brazil looking around there. And I've also served for a long period of time on the boards of Oregon Forest Industry Council and Douglas Timber Operators. So over these years, I've been involved a lot in policy issues and lawsuits with the forest products industry, so I'm quite familiar with that. I've always liked to fish, and I've learned a lot about fishery since I've been on the board here with OHRC in the last couple years. Most people I know and listen to, they like salmon and steelhead. Mainly they like to catch them and eat them. And they say the only difference between a wild fish and a hatchery fish is an adipose fin. They taste the same, they fight the same, they look the same. There is no difference. And a couple years ago, my thoughts were along those same lines. But since I've learned that there is a difference between wild fish and hatchery fish, and that hatchery fish can pose a threat and a risk to the wild fish population. So it's critical that we know and understand the difference and learn how to protect the wild fish. I also didn't realize, but now I understand that the ODFW by statute is mandated to protect wild native spawning fish while at the same time providing for a viable sport commercial and tribal fishery. And in order to do that, you have to have the hatcheries, but yet you have to protect the wild fish. OHRC and the research we do is just critical to being able to do this, to manage between the wild fish and the hatchery fish. Another important function I see of OHRC is I'm active in South Coast Anglers Group and STEP program locally, and I see that there's a bit of distrust between the local folks and the ODFW, largely because they think a lot of the policy and the rules and regulations are based on politics rather than sound, solid science. And some of the outreach things that we're doing at OHRC by getting down and visiting with the local folks, we've had David down talking to both the South Coast Anglers and the Douglas Timber Operators groups, and they get a much closer connection, a lot of respect for what we're doing, but it's just critical we're out there creating that bridge. We've got, there's many excellent ongoing research projects at OHRC, which David will explain to you, that with those projects we found they're good projects and really interesting things, but at ODFW, or at Oregon Hatchery Research Center, I think probably most of you are familiar, that it's funded, the general budget is funded like $1.2 million a year out of the ODFW's budget, but that covers salaries and overhead and utilities and that sort of thing, but it doesn't really cover the research. The research has been funded through grants and private entities or other public entities that have a special interest and want to fund it. David gets to pick and choose the research and set priorities of what's done, and the state of Oregon gets the value of that research. But we're not able to design and create the research projects we want because we don't have the long-term funding to do it. And these projects that we've mentioned, these three research projects, they take out three salmon life cycles in order to get a really good solid study, which is 12, 15 years, and we don't have funding to get those research projects started and on board. So that's a thing we need to work on. That they're just critical that we get these three long-term projects going and funded, and it'll teach us how to manage between wild and hatchery fish and give us some data we need to prevail in potential lawsuits that we might have. These three research projects, I'd like to go through them with you in a little bit more detail, but we've talked about them about a year ago. We brought these three projects up that Cam has mentioned, mate selection and differences caused by hatchery rearing and the imprinting and homing. But we selected these three long-term projects out of a whole list of things that were brought in front of the board, and we kind of worked through them and decided what was most important and most critical to fund. And over the year, since we've mentioned these three projects to you, we have taken these things and we've broken them down. I give you a handout there that shows that we took these. I don't expect you to look through them in great detail. It's a struggle to put them all together. But as you follow through those things, now we've broken them down into kind of language that us laymen can understand a little bit better than the science. Broke each project down step by step to where there's certain points through their benchmarks where you get an answer to a question or you don't get an answer to a question in the research, and you decide whether you want to go ahead or you want to abort it, or you decide whether it's too expensive or not too expensive. So I looked at these projects, we as a board looked at them, as kind of a business plan that's got to be, it's going to be funded, and if I'm going to sit there and ask for somebody, or I'll ask Wayne to ask somebody for funding, I want to be sure that there's some fiscal accountability step by step. That's my background is budgeting and that sort of thing, and I'm very concerned that there is accountability step by step. And we sent these things back to the scientists about three times. The board reviews them. We sent them back to the scientists, had them revised, had different checkpoints put in place. So we're to the point now we're pretty comfortable that we have good accountability, benchmarking. We'll get continual reporting back on the progress and the funding of these projects if we get them going. The three studies, I'll just briefly review them again. First is the mate selection. And studies indicate that hatchery fish, that fish raised in hatcheries are less successful in producing offspring than fish in the wild. And there's the evidence that wild fish don't mate at random, but perhaps select their mate based on disease resistance. So if we can understand how salmon select their mate in the wild, then maybe we can mimic that in the hatchery. And this would result in hatchery fish with better reproductive success and much less risk to damaging the wild fish stocks if they do stray. But the study involves extensive genetic sampling and then application of these, the results from that, and then field testing. And it takes, through the three cycles, takes nearly 16 years and costs about $4.6 million to do it. The second study that we selected is the differences caused by hatchery rearing. That there's, the studies indicate that the hatchery environment, whether it's maybe perhaps the density of the fish are raised or different feeding techniques or shade or maybe the configuration of the hatchery, there's something in there that appears to select for traits in the fish that cause reduced reproductive success in the wild. So this study is designed to identify the hatchery practices or environment or what conditions that are in the hatchery that cause this strong trait selection, and then identify what traits are under selection, and then the research would involve figuring that out, then identifying those genes, and then adjust the techniques or the conditions in the hatchery from what we've learned, and then field test to see if we do get actually a better reproductive success. And this takes about 14 years, costs about $3.7 million. If you look through later in detail, you can follow through those charts and kind of see how that goes. The third project we have is imprinting and homing. And that we know that hatchery fish stray, a certain percentage stray, but sometimes too many stray. And then they might spawn with the wild fish and cause a reduction in the spawning success of the offspring of those when the hatchery fish mix with the wild fish. So our goal is to get the fish back into the hatchery or catch them, and improve that homing. So this study involves odorant selection, try to find some chemical that you can put in the water to pull them back in the hatchery. You know, a lot of fish go back to their natal stream, but there's some hatcheries, like the hatchery in the Elk River, where water comes down the river and through the hatchery and back out in the river. So the fish know to come back up there, but they don't know where to stop or where to go. Well, if there's something we could put in the water to pull them right back into that hatchery, we might prevent the straying. So we're looking for that chemical, and then try to find a chemical that's cost-effective and that actually works to bring them back, and then find out what's the best timing to expose them to that, and the timing and the state, the life cycle stage of the life cycle of the fish to expose them, and then the length of time he's exposed. And then this would be field tested down in the Elk River. And again, this study takes about 15 years and costs about $3.3 million. So. But it's critical that we get long-term funding for these projects and to get them started and to get them going. And House Bill 3012 is the mechanism we're hoping to see passed to take care of this. I just like to mention that I've been in the timber industry 43 years, and I've watched two-thirds of our resource dry up and disappear. And I've watched just been rural economies have suffered terribly from this. Most of you in the rural areas know this. And the problem, a good deal of the problem, has been these frivolous ESA lawsuits and a lack of research. I just think back in the forest products industry, if we'd have thought ahead, I mean, 20 years ago, if we thought, you know, there's some threats to the industry, people would like to shut us down. So let's get out ahead and do some research. If we'd have perhaps figured out that the spotted owls' numbers weren't diminishing because of habitat reduction, but they're actually diminishing because through natural evolution they're being replaced by that barred owl. If we'd have had that research in our hand, or if we at least had ongoing research, then we probably could have prevented those lawsuits and prevented the loss of the destruction pretty much of our industry. And I think there's a real threat to our hatcheries and our salmon economy here in the state of Oregon. We've already had lawsuits on the Sandy River and the McKenzie River. Fortunately, we've kind of got those calmed down a little bit now, but it's probably going to pop up again. And just think, if we have these three research projects, if they're ongoing, and then somebody files a lawsuit and we can go to the judge and say, look, we've got these three projects going that the research is undergoing, and it's going to be able to tell us how to better manage between wild and hatchery fish, and just hold off making further restrictions on hatcheries until we get the results of this research. Then I think we've got a darn good chance of winning these. But please, we don't want to make the same mistake we did in our industry. I mean, I'd like to think that we learned something from what happened in the timber industry we can apply here. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, Chair.
My name is Lindsay Ball. I'm vice chair on the board with my two colleagues here. And I really want to impress upon you, I've been in lots of boards and commissions. You folks know that well. We've got a good one here. I'm very pleased with it. And they're engaged. They're not afraid of saying, that'll be dead on arrival. and then we can have a discussion from there. But everyone's very candid, and they look upon this board as a very serious chore with a project to help our fishery resources. What I want to speak today is two funding mechanisms. One's a bridge funding proposal that would bring $600,000 of bridge funding to the table for research prior to the ad valorem tax kicking in, which really won't be realized until late 2016, just because the way the ad valorem fees work in the industry. If we could do that, the projects that Scott just mentioned to you, we could start pushing those, you know, as soon as we get the money. The second thing is we have a real opportunity before us, and I'm encouraging everyone to consider this on a very positive vein. Currently, there is a proposal by Oregon State University to expand the Hatfield Marine Science Center down at Newport. And it looks like there's funding that's already in place. There's going to be some other match funding come from, I suspect, a private donation. But in the plans for the expansion of the Hatfield Marine Science Center is a number one genome lab. And that gets back to our genetics issues that we're seeing play out in our state. We don't have a fish geneticist on staff with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We've been catch-as-catch-can with some work that Oregon State University's done on research, but that's their research project, their research money. It's not ours. Sometimes we have to get, well, basically to get genetics work done, we take a lot of our work to Washington, contract with them. But we have an opportunity to partner with Oregon State University with a half-time position who is a fish geneticist on staff at the Hatfield Marine Science Center. And we can start our work in fish genetics that we need to do in the state to be able to compete with the interest groups who have filed suit against us on genetic related cases. And we pay a lot in legal fees to go to court over these lawsuits. And they have the preponderance of the evidence. We don't, and the judge rules in their favor. That's what took place on the Sandy, and the same thing took place down on the McKenzie. McKenzie wasn't as severe in the court direction as was on the Sandy, but it's still there, and we have to deal with that. And, you know, I don't mind getting into a debate with someone, but if I don't have the information to get into a debate, that's a loser, let me tell you. The cost for that genetics position is looked upon as about $200,000 a biennium. That was a price tag that we placed on it the other day. And I would ask that you work with our Ways and Means committees and support the notion that we fund the bridge money as well as the fish geneticist position, which would be half-time shared with Oregon State University. I think it's a very appropriate pursuit of our interests. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Committee members. Vice Chair Krieger.
Lindsay had talked to me sometime in February or so, and I think he'd had conversations clear back to the prior director and up through this director about the need to have some genetic availability. So I did go to the both of the chairs of the Ways and Means House and Senate, and also down to Paul Siebert in Ways and Means Natural Resources. They've been aware of this for some time. They've been working on it. I've talked to the speaker, I've talked to Representative Hoyle, so I've encouraged my Democratic colleagues to understand that it is extremely important. You can spend the money in court forever, and have no results that you can put on the ground, but you can put it into research and the geneticists and in the research center, and we can produce a product that's going to help Oregon and become, I think, the forefront for salmon science. And we need to make sure that what's great about this, it's not partisan. And there's no reason that we can't get support from everyone to talk to our leadership, both these and ours, and work the next couple, 2 or 3 weeks to make sure that it happens.
Thank you very much. Additional questions or comments? Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this boils down to something that we've dealt with several times and discussed it several times in this committee, and that is the ability for an organization to sue the taxpayer and make money at it. They will continue with these suits as long as that's in place, and we need to encourage our Congress to rectify that situation and adjust it accordingly. When you give someone $400, $500, $600 per hour when they're hired an attorney for $80 to $120 an hour, you don't have to build a Saturn V in your backyard to figure out that that's a good deal. And consequently, what I'm hearing from you is that it's okay that they have voodoo science, but we have to have specific science. So we're guilty until we prove ourselves innocent. Am I correct on this?
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, those are civil lawsuits, and the judge is mandated by civil law to rule upon the preponderance of the evidence. And if we don't have the evidence to come back on their claims, then the judge will rule in their favor.
Follow up.
Please.
But that's the point I'm getting to. They can make a claim that has no scientific base. The judge will rule on that unless we have something to counteract that?
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, that is how the system works.
Yeah, not a dandy.
There's a good science and there's a gooder science.
That's right. Then there's science of your choice.
Well, it works like they say the red tree bole is threatened, and we have to protect every place it walks or moves until we can prove it's not. And that's about the way it works. I mean, all they have to do is throw out something for a listing, and then the judge, if there's no science out there at all, the judge will rule it needs protection until you prove. That's what happened to us in the timber industry.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was kind of adding up some of these figures here. All of the numbers that you have, Scott, on your synopsis here, and then the 600,000 that Lindsay was talking about to bridge, and it comes up to 7.4 million over. Now, you have a 10-year, some of these are different, you know, 3 years, 2 years, 10 years. So is that 7.4 million over 10 years would be the need, or is there more?
That's about right. I didn't hand it out to you, but we have a flow chart out over 15 years or 16 years that shows how much funding is required for each year all the way through, and then, you know, at certain spots you might decide you don't want to continue with the project and you stop it. So then that funding could either go back or go a different direction or realign the research. But yeah, I've actually got that with me.
Please. So as I'm looking at this, it's 740,000 a year, which is a small percentage of the 1.5 billion I think that Kama talked about as far as the income off the fisheries. So it seems like this amount of money to do this would not be difficult to raise based on the volume of dollars that are produced by this.
Yes, but it is being long term, and to get the scientists and the grad students to sign into this project, they've got to be somewhat assured that the funding is going to be there when they dive into it and get it all set up.
One of the biggest problems too we face, Representative, is some of the bigger grants that come from, say, the federal government or from NOAA, they'll have a real defined direction, and we have to find a way to pull what we need out of that definition of direction, and it makes it very difficult over the course of having to answer a question during two or three or four salmon runs, and then to try and cobble enough of those together to give us the answer that we need. That's why dedicated funding over the long haul to answer these questions is so important.
One more follow-up?
Please.
The expansion to the Hatfield Science Center, was that a private donation? Was that what I heard, Lindsay? Or
Chair Witt, Representative Barreto, as I understand it, there's a bond that has been approved, tentatively planned to be approved through the state bond sales. And that is going to be matched by a private donation, and that's where they get the bridge money.
Okay.
And for it, it's a sizable sum. I can't tell you exactly what it is today. The first estimate was $25 million on the bond and $25 million from a donation, and I can't tell you if that's changed or not. I think it has come down some from the original plan. But that's what's in the works with that. And that genome lab, we've partnered with Oregon State University for years, and that's when we were leaders in fishery science during those times. And we walked away from that pretty much in 1985. And we've watched ourselves just kind of, retreat. And we need to get back into the fish and wildlife research work that we used to do in partnership with Oregon State. Great school, highly thought of in the science world, and they can bring a lot to the table as well. And one of the things that, when I talk about fish genetics, one of the things I remind people too is, what we need to do in Oregon is create a fisheries genetic library. So that we have all fishes in Oregon tracked, and their genetic code is in a library that we can refer back to. And just like what Scott was saying, if the timber industry had been ahead of it a little bit more, they wouldn't have had such a downturn in their economic viability in this state. And I say, if we can put that library together, it would be to our benefit. I mean, everything from Chinook salmon and steelhead, they're kind of on the forefront today. But what happens if something happens to the red-sided shiner, and we don't know, have any information on it? Things like that can happen in our public water systems. And if we don't have the information, but we can get it, why don't we just get it done? There's my pitch. Make it happen.
Vice Chair Krieger, followed by Vice Chair McLean.
When we did House Bill 3441 in 2013, we got that passed unanimously, except for Senator Boquist, who voted no, but he voted no on every bill that day because he didn't work on Saturday. And that's the day that bill came up, so that's why he had a no vote.
Wow.
The committee, that people that were here, different caucus members, those that were really involved in it, had committed to try to find a funding source that was going to have some certainty to it. Now, you just don't go out and do that. We had to get commitment from the wild fish people, Oregon Trout, Oregon Anglers, Outdoor Council, Salmon for All, CCA, all coming on board with some poundage fees and surcharges. And that generates, 3012 generates about $1.2 million. Over the 10-year before the sun sets there, about $12 million that then they can use at different levels to fund these research projects. But what's going to take place, I can guarantee you, when you start asking the questions of science and you get an answer, it's going to generate another question for another project somewhere down the line, things we don't even think about today. So that's why it's got a 10-year sunset. Probably could have put a 15 on it, three generations instead of two. But there'll be a couple people that might be here yet after another 10 years. I do not intend to be here 10 years from now. It'll be up to a new generation of people, people at the department. Dr. Noakes may be there 10 years from now, still working on something that his career and life has taken him down that path. And I want you to understand there is a commitment to the need over the next 10 years to fund the research, and we've got a mechanism to do it. We just got to make sure that leadership understands how important the bill is.
Vice Chairman Flake.
Well, I know we probably have other people to speak, but I just wanted to say to you three gentlemen that this seems like some of the best work that I've seen this year as far as not just scoping it, but really looking at it as a generational type of program that really is going to provide things for future generations. And I really appreciate what the Vice Chair just said in the sense that we have to find people to follow us that totally understand what the goal was and what the needs are. One of the other things that I think it's important for us to acknowledge is the fact that I personally believe that, you know, I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian. I like forests, but I also believe in well-managed forests, and I also believe that that means that there will be some production and there will be some harvest. And I think it's important for us all to realize that if we all have the same goals with other groups, just as Representative Krieger just said, that we all have the goal of healthy fish. We all have the goal of healthy environment. We have a goal of healthy streams. We just have to figure out how to do that in a balanced way. And nobody wants, I can't imagine sensible people wanting to take their money and throwing it into lawsuits if we could throw it into research and throw it into cooperation and discussion and try to figure out how do we get those same goals to be expressed in a way that we can coexist with good environment, good production, and good harvest. And that can be on any level with a number of different types of products. And so it seems like this plan helps us start with the second generation. As Representative Krieger said, you know, this has been going on for years and needs to continue in a very pragmatic way. And I think that the scoping that you've done and the three projects that you've laid out, you know, simply continue on that process. But I really do appreciate the work that's been done before I got here and hope that we can continue to work with everybody in the community on all sides of the issue. You indicated that your board was doing that, and I think it's extremely important for us to, you know, to really extend that out to the general conversation, whether it be at the legislature or anywhere else. But we're all here together, and we're on Team Planet. And it's one of those things where it doesn't matter if you live in Gold Beach or you live in Forest Grove or you live, you know, somewhere in Harney County, we all benefit from this type of research and continuing healthy communities in a number of different areas and ways. So thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Vice Chair McLean, if your workload allows, I would like you to take what you just said, put that down on paper as a letter that those committee members here who would choose to sign on to, a letter to leadership asking for funding on the basis that you just outlined.
Okay.
They do have it all tape recorded. So
just have them go back and
Gentlemen, I want to ask you a question that you may or may not be equipped to answer, but I'm going to ask the question trying to put things in context. And if you don't know the answer, I know you know somebody who does. And my question is, if you were to take any similar kind of scientific research projects over a decade-long period of time on the critical key issues in that field of science, what kind of research project does $750,000 buy? Is this a good buy, a super fantastic buy? What would we expect the typical research project to cost annualized over a decade's period?
Well, I think maybe I can address that. Just some of my work centers on stream work throughout the Pacific Northwest. And when you look at the city of Seaside, just faced almost losing their sewer plant because they had 1,800 feet of protection, which was whittled down by the Nicanicum and the Pacific Ocean to 5 feet by the time we got to it. And by the time they finished paying for that one bit of, it was fish habitat that stabilized the sewer system, they had probably well over $1 million into one basically small project to protect that area. So if you look at what that level of funding can produce, that's one heck of a lot of bang for your buck. And I think that can also be leveraged to help us as we go forward in the future. And what we're going to get out of this research, we're detailing for you what we think we know for sure we're going to get out of it. But if you look at like the space program and what they got out of the research, it didn't just take us to the moon. It helped us deal with cancer. It helped us come up with better forms of plastic and boron for flight, survival gear. The list just is endless that what spun out of that research. And I think that's also what we're going to get here, because when you hear Dr. Noakes and this science team, when we talk bang for your buck, and we also talk about pennies versus thousands of dollars that we'd pay out in lawsuits, and what we're getting for this as a state, what our fisheries are getting, it's dramatic impact. If you do a lift chart and the money we've got into it is here and what we're getting out of it is here, that's literally, you know, what we're going to get for this expenditure. So that's the best way I can explain it.
Please.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, if you take a look at what we might learn and how we can improve our return rate on hatchery fish and have them come back to a central location, wherever, but think of this. The Pacific Rim countries, the countries that rim the Pacific Ocean, we release 5 billion salmon a year, and we only get 1% back. Think about that. That's that to me, that's not a very good return on your investment.
Point well made. But so, cutting edge research, one of the best facilities in the world, on the critical issues facing fisheries here today. This looks like a heck of a buy for the taxpayers. I appreciate that information. Additional questions or comments? I'm seeing none. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. And it was great to have you all back today.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, I'd like to call forward, please, Stan Steele and Chuck Pavlik. Committee members, before this panel starts, you know what 500 oysters gets you? A copper tone tan.
Chuck, go ahead.
Go ahead, Stan.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Stan Steele. Representing the Alsea Sportsman Association and the Oregon Outdoor Council and the Kings River Guides Association. These are three organizations that strongly endorse finding a consistent, solid funding stream for research. All three organizations have thousands of members and associated businesses that actually benefit from having solid science, solid research managed programs. And I think that's a key, researched managed programs. If we don't have the research that Equal Access to Justice Act, EJA, is going to rule the day. When EJA doesn't work is when we have the science. When Centers for Biological Diversity or other groups who really do make money off of that activity realize that the science is there, either with a federal or a state agency, management agency, those suits are the ones we don't see. Oregon has several looming species, Pacific pine marten, fisher, and fish that we don't even probably realize yet that will be EJA qualifiers within the near future. How we once again can delay those lawsuits is science, sound science. Before this committee and others in this building this year, there's been numerous hearings and discussions, predator management, lead ammunition, The list just is on and on and on. Those are all scientific questions. Every one of them gets down to, we have the science. Is the science available? Is it lacking? Can we defend our programs? And after 25 years as an Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife officer, when we made a violator contact in the field, we often use science. Forensics was absolutely a key component of our investigations and our convictions. If we lacked the science, convictions often did not occur. As well as the fact that we just were not capable of really being very strong in our performance. Things are science-based in the world we live in today. And the controversial issues that are before you often are decided on what we would classify as the best available science, not true science always, because that just really doesn't often exist, but the best available. In fisheries management in the last two decades, Oregon averages, or the Northwest averages, about $1 billion a year in recovery, and that includes spills to all the different issues that we have to deal with, on agricultural pesticides to current setbacks from streams, whatever it may be. These are all impacting. These are all components that get back to the what we just heard from Lindsay of a 1% return. But we really don't have a lot of idea which one of these are major components. The Oregon Hatchery Research Center gives us an ability to do that type of work. I was there yesterday. I'm really tied to the place. Representative Bob Jensen had a hearing in Alcee, Oregon, when the bill that set up the center was being proposed. And it was really great to have Bob and two or three other members of the committee come to the Alcee Grange Hall. And all of us country hicks accumulated. We all got there. You know, this is where we have our potlucks. This is where we have our memorial services and all the different things. And we had a community meeting on the Alcee Hatchery Research Center, the Fall Creek, located at Fall Creek. And it was positive. Here's a community that was concerned. We were concerned about more restrictions being put on fisheries. So we weren't really, at that point, thinking anything other than, is this another problem, or is this going to be a solution? And we came out of that endorsing a solution. We cleaned fish ladders. We had a flood in 2009 or 10. 8 feet of silt filled the fish ladder at the Alcee Hatchery. The department doesn't have the staff because they were trying to remove 8 feet of silt from their ponds. They're trying to save literally hundreds of thousands of fish. Volunteers, my brother and I and several others, removed 8 feet of silt and beaver sticks from the Alcee fish trap to make sure that we could remove hatchery fish from the wild component. Because based on science, we know that those interactions oftentimes are detrimental to wild fish recovery. That's science-driven information. So what you had was volunteers, and I call us volunteer scientists. Actually, Joe and I were chuckling just a few minutes ago when we were talking about chemicals that we could put in the water that could attract fish. And Joe and I feel that if we can find that perfect chemical on our salmon eggs, then we are going to be much more effective fishermen. So, but that's citizen science. And OHRC is involved in that. Sodium sulfite. We know that sodium sulfite in a concentration high enough can cause smolt death. That's science. So what has Oregon done? We've started a voluntary program, angler education, to not use sodium sulfite in certain circumstances because of the detrimental impact that it could have on salmonids. That's science. That's science, citizen science application. Whiskey Creek, North Coast, Tillamook. Incredible volunteer hatchery. benefiting literally hundreds of thousands of Oregonians and wild fish recovery. Morgan Creek, Coos Bay Country. An incredible facility. School children visit it by the hundreds, actively, hands-on, field of fish slime as they're sorting fish and spawning. I passed out some flyers and some information that we got from the Hatchery Research Center. Look at the bright orange cover. Each one of those is a fish. Dr. Noakes and I had meetings 3 or 4 years ago, and we were talking about how do we determine the best way to implant fish. Imprint, not implant, imprint, to make sure that those fish came back to where they respond. You know, there's a lot of research that says that they'll actually come back to the same riffle. That's incredible to me. When you think of the journey out the Alsea River, which is a relatively small basin, but a 60-mile-long river, and then we might go, well, steelhead have been caught off of Taiwan. Think of the journey, and then to return home so that hopefully in the future, Representative Witt can make a cast and catch one in the Alsea River. That is an incredible, incredible.
I could say so.
But what we have to do is have the science that makes all of this come together and manage the best we can. Because there's a lot of criticism of hatchery programs in Oregon. When you look at the rogue economic impact that Cam or Scott or Lindsay mentioned, that's not just the rogue. The McKenzie trout situation. Hatchery trout on the McKenzie spur Oregon's most economically responsive guide business for trout. It's just an incredible economic impact to Lane County. In 2008, ODFW did a economic research with Southwick and Associates. It's an economic impact of fishing in Oregon. And what you will notice, the top counties are counties that have high harvest rates, high participation rates. Tillamook, Lane, Coos. And when you start looking at the hatchery programs, you'll see Tillamook, Lane, Coos. It's very, very easy to connect the dots between research and economic activity. So with that said, people often say I get too windy, but when you're so passionate about something, it's hard not to be. This is an incredible facility. And for those Metro representatives and senators in this building, we built a hell of a jail, didn't we? And the door has never been opened. How many million did we spend on the jail? We can't allow that to occur with what is probably the nation's and maybe the world's most state-of-the-art research facility. You can't build it. It's not a field of dreams. You can't build it and they will come. Because the facility is the infrastructure. The minds are what we have to have. The inquiring, the curiosity, that's what drives science. What, why, how is what we have to answer. If we don't have those questions and those bright minds coming from Pakistan, isn't that incredible? Scientists coming from Pakistan, a war-torn country that we wouldn't even think would be worried about fish. And we have scientists coming to Fall Creek, Oregon. If none of you have ever, if you have been to Fall Creek, it's 30 feet wide, crystal clear, beautiful stream. And think somebody from Pakistan. I mean, in fact, I'm sitting back there, and I'm still in awe of that. So it shows us what we can do. We have partners. We have Abernathy Fish Research Center, ran by the federal government. We have the Idaho Research Lab. These are great labs. Idaho doesn't have coast. Idaho doesn't have a rainforest. Idaho doesn't have a Coquille River. Oregon does. And not to say that science elsewhere isn't very applicable here, because it is. But we really need our own. If we want to be a leader, That means that we're going to not only rely on others, but we're going to try to stay ahead of others. To not economically support this, I'm a little taken back that Chair Witt has to continually plea for others to endorse something that to most of us out here living this life, living our dream, just say this is just common sense. You know, you don't build a baseball field and then don't give the kids bats, gloves, and balls. I mean, how does it work? So, in closing, from an Al C. Engler, when you walk in the front steps of the Oregon Hatchery Research Center, you'll see a drinking fountain. Hermie Walter, lifelong timber faller, probably caught more steelhead than any man alive. And that is really, I think, probably true. This guy fished all over the world. That had steelhead, he fished. Al C. was home. Grew up as a commercial fisherman on the lower Al C., actually on a homestead in Fall Creek. And there's a plaque there for him and a drinking fountain. The community came together realizing this was our guru of winter steelheading. Right beside Ernst is one of my dad's drift boats. So these issues to us, we're talking culture. We're talking way of life. And we have to have the research to support that. In closing, once again, I will do everything that I possibly can do to talk to anyone. I would love to have an audience for a few minutes with the governor on the importance of research and how that helps us maintain our programs that are rebuilding Oregon's economy. Red tree voles, well, marbled murrelets, well, Chinook salmon. We have to have all of these science questions answered to the best capabilities, and then when we have another question, like the Representative Krieger said, we have to be able to work on those too. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chuck, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. I'm Chuck Pavlik. I'm a elected port commissioner for the Port of Al C. I sat on the Al C Sportsmen's Association board as a founding board member. I am a member of the Al C Advisory Committee board. And it's a privilege to address this committee. And to say in doing so I am out of my element is an understatement, believe me. I would like to talk a little bit about economics, the effect that fish and fisheries have on Oregon ports. Being a 70-year native Oregonian, I also would like to speak a little bit from the heart about fisheries in the state. Recreational and commercial salmon fisheries represent a huge part of the economies of all the coastal ports in Oregon. The elimination or decrease in salmon populations would and has had negative economic impacts on ports and communities along the Oregon coast. Cam mentioned earlier that there's work being done to put a dollar figure on recreational caught salmon in the rivers of Oregon. I have some information here available from the state of California. They have completed such a study. I'd like to share that with you, realizing that their figures may not be exactly the same as they would be in Oregon, but it'll give you some idea of the value that a salmon has. Harvest data was obtained for this report from the Pacific Fishery Management Council, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, along with matrix provided by state economists with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resource Conservation Service. We generated a pre-fish estimate of economic impact for each salmon. Each salmon caught in river in 2013 had an economic impact of approximately $1,176. For California, in terms of jobs, sales, gross regional product, and ripple effects to the economy. Not saying that the figures would be exact for Oregon, but I'm certain that we would be fairly close to that same figure. So if you're putting a $1,000 price tag on every salmon that's caught by recreational fishermen, that figure, like Cam stated earlier, is going to be in the billions. So it's easy to understand why, if that fishery is lost, the tremendous economic impact it would have on the ports and the communities along the Oregon coast. An economic study on the coastal multi-species plan. Now, this is in Oregon. An economic study on the coastal multi-species plan commissioned by the Wild Salmon Center. It finds the economic contribution of recreational salmon steelhead fisheries in the coastal multi-species area to be about $32 million per year. Hatchery and wild fish account for about 60% and 40%, respectively, of those economic contributions. So the money derived from that one fish, 60% of those fish are hatchery fish. That's humongous, and it's very important. I want to talk a little bit about my port of Alsea that I represent. One-third of the operating funds for the port of Alsea come from launch and mortgage fees. Without the salmon fishery, it would be very difficult for the port to maintain the services to the public it now provides. And I want to move on a little bit and talk a little bit about the research center. The key, the answer to all of these problems and these issues. I want to read to you the Oregon Hatchery Research Center mission statement. I just want to read a little part of it. Realizing, and this is the first sentence, realizing that healthy, wild, and hatchery fish runs are a vital part of each Oregonian's heritage. The mission of the Oregon Hatchery Research Center is to be an internationally recognized leader in fishery science. And then that's just part of it. It goes on. But I want to stress the part about the importance of the Hatchery Center to each Oregonian's heritage. I think that's very, very important. Healthy wild and hatchery fish runs are each Oregonian's heritage. This is a powerful statement. Heritage is a promise. A promise to future generations that the fisheries that Oregonians now enjoy will be there for them to also enjoy. To quote poet Robert Service, a promise made is a debt unpaid. The fishery research being done at the OHRC is a way that that heritage promise will be kept alive for future generations. Now, if I move on here, here about 3 weeks ago, the Alsea Sportsmen's Association worked with the Lincoln County School District, and we placed 4 aquariums in the school at Walport. We put 3 of them in 3rd and 4th grade rooms, and 1 of them in a special needs room at the high school. ODF&W supplied steelhead eggs, and they were hatched, incubated, and hatched in the aquariums. It was a study opportunity for the students, and the school was delighted to have them. They thought it was one of the best hands-on learning experiences that could be provided. We then planned a field trip to the OHRC to release the fry that the students had raised into Fall Creek. We made up an itinerary to spend the day at the OHRC. There were 2 busloads of students, approximately 80 students total. At the OHRC, the program included 4 learning stations where the students split up into 4 groups, and they went to each learning station for 35, 40 minutes. Feed fish and a short tour was the first item on the agenda, where they got to feed fish pellets to fish in one of the tanks and tour the facility. Next, it was fish dissection and organ identification. We did autopsies on salmon. Those little 3rd and 4th graders were up there sticking their fingers in the gills, touching the heart. They were amazed. They'd never seen anything like that before. They weren't squeamish or standbackish. They were interested in it, what was happening. Then we had the fry release, the fish that they had raised. We went down to Fall Creek, and they got to turn them loose in the Fall Creek. We had streamside ecology, where we took samples off the bottom of Fall Creek with nets, turned rocks over, and scooped up the insect life, the fish feed that lives in the creek. So that was a tremendous learning experience for those students. And the point I want to make is there at the Hatchery Research Center, with Dr. Noakes and some of the other scientists that we have, they're some of the best and most distinguished in the world. But yet, we took busloads of 3rd and 4th graders to that research center, and they learned. It was a great experience for them. And some of those students there may be the future Dr. Noakes and other scientists. So the facility lends itself to a very diverse age group. The Alsea Sportsmen's Association intends to continue field trips with students to the OHRC, and we have plans in the work to expand to other school districts. We would like to expand to the I-5 corridor so we can get more exposure to the Hatchery Center, so students and adults alike can see the value of that facility. Now, when I talked about a little bit from the heart, that will be this finish. There are those who would suggest that the Oregon Hatchery Research Center is not needed and should be closed. In medieval times, backwards-thinking people burned and destroyed all books and literature. dealing with science, learning, and knowledge advancement. We like to think that we are beyond that backward mindset. It's baffling to me why shutting down the world's most foremost fishery research facility should even be considered. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee members, any questions or comments for this panel? Representative Frederick.
Thank you, and I apologize for not being here for the other. I had another two bills that I had to deal with in another section of the Capitol. Thank you for coming and talking about this research center. It is important. We have a, unfortunately, we have a situation where in many cases, many of the students in my district, I'm from Portland, are not getting a chance to go out and see any of these places at all for a number of reasons. One is just simply the cost of field trips, that money is being used on other things. The other one is the cost of time, because in many cases, those third and fourth fifth graders who used to go and see some of those hatcheries are now spending much of their time getting ready for tests rather than getting a chance to investigate and be curious and poke their fingers in different places as well. I would encourage you to try to find contacts with whatever groups you might find, especially teachers who can get a chance to get away and see that, because it is something that's important, and it brings them into an understanding of how much they are connected with the rest of Oregon. So that's a different thing altogether. So I appreciate you bringing that in, and just ask that you get this information out in a much broader fashion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. When we approached the Walport School about this program, the principal told us that funding was not available for buses and a field trip. So the Howell C. Sportsman's Association stepped up, and we supplied that funding. And I understand what you're saying. A couple of weeks before we made our field trip, I was at the OHRC facility, and there was a bus with kids. And on the side of the bus, it said Burns, Oregon. So they had come from as far away as Burns to visit the Hatchery Center and some of the other attractions on the Oregon coast, I'm sure. But I understand the schools and the funding issues that a lot of them face. But there are groups out there, like the Howell C. Sportsman's Association, and we're not a large group. We're a small group, and we stay pretty much close to home on the Howell C. River. But there are organizations out there that could pick up the funding to get the kids to see what's available at the Hatchery Center and just regular hatcheries throughout the state. And through exposure like that, it's that is how you educate even the adults about the facility. So it's critical, it's important that these type of endeavors continue.
Vice Chair McLean, followed by Representative Whitsitt.
I just wanted to, is it Chuck, is that correct? Your name is Chuck?
Yes, it is Chuck.
I wanted to tell you that you said that you weren't prepared to speak to us, and as a communication teacher for 42 years, yes, you were. And you could actually give lessons on how to speak to bodies like ourselves, because giving the stories and giving the feelings from the heart, I think that helps sell it more than anything as far as understanding how the facility or anything else fits into the community. But thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Representative Whitsitt, followed by Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being here. I am going to divert just a little bit, but it all relates to understanding salmon survival, and I would like the committee to be aware of the Klamath Basin again this year. We are losing a great part of our $600 million agricultural industry because of partly it's water, partly we don't understand why the salmon aren't surviving or, you know, what's going on there exactly. And NOAA Fisheries has taken about 50% of our irrigation water and run it down the Klamath River already. And so we are looking at the impact on 1,000 jobs in an area that Klamath Falls is 18,000 people. The area is 60,000. We're looking at 1,000 jobs being lost. This is the largest cattle-producing area and one of the largest alfalfa-producing areas in the state of Oregon, which contributes to our economy, our revenue for the state, just in a very large part. And we really need to understand, we have two biological opinions that are, they've been combined into one, but we're holding the water back in our lake for sucker fish, an endangered, ostensibly endangered sucker fish, which is a ceremonial fish for the tribes, and the rest of the water, they're running down the Klamath River, and consequently, the irrigators are just in a terrible way, and this translates to, this is all we have left in the Klamath Basin. Our forest industry is gone, and so we have an incredible problem down there, and it relates to salmon, not understanding exactly the survival in that particular system, and that is a little different than the coastal systems here because it goes into California. You know, it's a very long river system, as you know. So I just want the committee to be aware of what's happening down there. It's just tragic, absolutely unbelievable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Gorsuch.
Well, I think what Representative Whitsett was just saying really underscores the need for good science. And you're talking about Wapato Jail, which never opened. We built it and then said, oops, there's no money to run it. So we don't want to do that. Although I don't like to think of a hatchery as a jail, just saying. But the science is tremendously important. And I, too, am, as I said earlier, I'm quite surprised that we should even have to be having this discussion. And so we definitely have a problem with education. One of the reasons that I have, through the geography department where I teach at Mount Hood, done a salmon festival on Multnomah Creek for the last several years is for that very reason. As people come in, families, little kids, adults, and they poke at the fish, and then they see the fish that are actually in the stream when we're there. And it really is impressive to me how much people react to that when they actually see the fish. They can touch the fish that are being autopsied and all of those things. And so anything that we can do to foster more of that education and certainly the research, because policy, good policy, is not based on anything other, or shouldn't be based on anything other than good research. So I'm just very supportive of this and hope that we can do whatever we can to fund it.
Please.
Just briefly, Chair Witt, Representative Gorsuch, take it to the classroom. In other words, possibly we, Representative Fredericks, we can't get some inner-city important kids to Fall Creek, Oregon, although it would be just great for them to see what was the rain down there in the coastal rainforest yesterday. It was beautiful. Some might say that it was kind of misty and kind of not really fun, but it was great to see what was going on. Maybe we need to take it on the road. Let's take our show on the road. And that, you've heard us in here before on public education bills. If we're going to change the mindset and find the financial solutions to a lot of problems that we have with our management agencies in Oregon, and specifically with ODFW, it's going to be through our public education, our ability to let people know these are the benefits that we're providing to every Oregonian. What Chuck was mentioning about on the field trip, we also, there's a little lake right downstream from the OHRC called Thistle Pond, and it was an old log pond, and there used to be quite a community up Fall Creek, a logging community, and to watch the kids come in and catch trout out of Thistle Pond, and this weekend, for example, statewide is the free fishing weekend. So I believe it's this weekend, isn't it, Bruce? Yes.
Yes.
And this is what this bill and so many others are about, is helping drought-stricken Klamath Basin, having people understand that possibly there's a research project that is still in the minds of someone to saying that, how can we lessen impacts on salmonids during heavy drought periods? Because, gosh, I think all of us understand we're in a climate change period. This is going to be cutting edge. And to not be prepared, that's what I'm worried about. And that's why I really hope the committee can reach out to other caucuses and others and steer some of us who are very willing to also go visit and put as much pressure as we can on to making sure that people understand this isn't just about fish. This is so much larger than about fish. It's about ranching in southeastern Oregon. It's about timber harvest in the Cascades. This research center can be involved in every one of those issues.
Gentlemen, thank you so very, very much. And I think if we unleash the two of you in this capital for a few days, we'd have the funding that's necessary here. And Chuck, I'd be proud to lobby with you any day. Thank you, gentlemen, very, very much. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Kyle Smith, David Noakes, and Bruce McIntosh. And gentlemen, I apologize in advance. I've got 15 minutes. I've got to get the three of you on and a couple of other people following you. So if you would be so kind as to please summarize your statements, I would be very grateful. Welcome to our committee. Thank you for your appearance.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me today, having us today, I should say. My name's Kyle Smith. I'm the Membership Engagement Manager for Trout Unlimited. Trout Unlimited is the nation's largest nonprofit cold water fisheries conservation organization. We have 155,000 members across the country. As my title implies, I do a lot of travel around the country helping those members engage in our mission of cold water conservation. In the last couple months, I've been in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, Bozeman, Montana, Branson, Missouri, Frederick, Maryland, all over the country. And everywhere I go, people comment to me when I tell them that I live in Oregon about how wonderful the fishing is here and how badly they want to come and wet a line in one of our rivers. Names like that have been thrown around today, the Mackenzie, the North Umpqua, the Rogue, and the Deschutes, are names that some people only read about in magazines. And so I think we're incredibly lucky to have these resources in our own backyard, and I think that the wild fish that inhabit those rivers are some of the gems of this state, and we have a responsibility to everyone, not only in Oregon, but across the country, to protect those resources. And I think that the OHRC is an absolutely integral part of minimizing the impacts between hatchery and wild fish to ensure that those wild populations are viable well into the future. And also so that Oregonians have the opportunity to continue to harvest and enjoy those resources on their dinner tables at night. So in the interest of keeping things brief, I'll cut it off there.
Thank you so very, very much.
My name is David Noakes. I'm a professor in fisheries and wildlife at Oregon State University and the director at the Oregon Hatchery Research Center. Chair Witt and Vice Chairs McLean and Krieger, thank you very much, the other members as well, for the opportunity to come here and talk to you. A number of people have already touched upon some of the highlights. I'd remind people again, this is Free Fishing Day on Saturday at the OHRC. There'll be several hundred people there. To give some idea of the outreach that we have a sign printed up to welcome people, and we have, at last count, 27 languages for people to represent those who have contact with the OHRC. We currently have 5 visiting scientists from Sweden, Japan, and Hawaii who are there doing research, which is typical of the kind of things we do there. In the 10 years, less than 10 years, we've been operating, we've conducted about 100 research projects there, ranging all the way from molecules to the North Pacific Ocean, looking at genetics, looking at behavior, looking at ecology, looking at various things related to management, a lot of educational things. We're a key partner with the Tillamook and Lincoln County School Boards, for example. The Oregon Coast STEM Hub Center, located in Newport, has raised about $3.5 million for education for science teachers and science students along the coast. A colleague from Japan is here. He's just been awarded a 3-year grant to, in fact, collaborate with the science teachers and science educators here in Oregon to enrich both their science education and the science education of our students here. So we're active in a lot of ways. The research projects we've done, as I said, range all the way from looking at molecular genetics, looking at stable isotopes that will help us to identify where fish came from, to use non-invasive methods for identifying fish, whether they're hatchery fish. We can tell what rivers the fish came from, where they spent their life. We've done, Carl Schreck and I have done a lot of work, that some of which is indicated over there, determining the mortality that's caused by or caused during the migration of steelhead and salmon smolts going down to the ocean, which is a problem that OHRC has directed attention towards. Some recent work that people will be aware of, made the recent cover, Fisheries Magazine. I worked with Andy Dittman from NOAA and others looking at olfactory imprinting. We're the first people to, in fact, demonstrate that olfactory imprinting occurs during incubation. And this, in fact, is being directed towards a project at the Elk River Hatchery to try and solve a problem they have there. Perhaps some of the highest profile recent research has been done with Nathan Putman, who was a postdoc here, who's now a faculty member at the University of Miami in Florida. If you Google, if you want to Google, just put in Nathan Putman, magnets, salmon, and you'll get 100,000 hits on the Internet from Google for the research that he's done. He's published 5 papers in the last 2 years on that that's attracted a lot of attention. The research that people have outlined looking at mate choice, in fact, is the key research that's being done anywhere on salmon. That's done by Michael Banks and his collaborators. The key research, of course, on domestication effects is the stuff that Michael Bluen has done, and both Banks and Bluen are working at the OHRC. And then the work we're doing on imprinting, both olfactory imprinting and geomagnetic imprinting, is also the premier research that's being done in those fields. And so we're very fortunate, first of all, to have the OHRC as a physical place. But as people have mentioned, it's really an important conceptual place as well to bring people together, both within Oregon State itself, ODF&W, across the Northwest, but worldwide, to bring people together. We have people coming from all over the place who want to not just use the facilities, but bring their expertise. And all those people bring their own funding as well. We estimate currently that we have about $1.5 million a year in research funding that comes through the OHRC to support the things we do. And that comes from NSF, it comes from NOAA, it comes from Japan, it comes from Norway, it comes from Sweden, it comes from various sources here. Research is an expensive business. Carl Schreck and I have funding for one research project this year. That's $764,000 a year for one research project. So research is expensive. The cost of people is expensive. But as the bumper stickers will tell you, if you think education is expensive, consider the alternative, and a number of people have already pointed that out. So it's an expensive proposition. It's a very active, collaborative, progressive place that we're running, and we're proud of the kinds of things we do. We invite people to come and see us, not just for free fishing weekend. We have a fall festival in November that's open to the public, where we have hands-on arts and crafts and a variety of kinds of things, and people get a chance to see live wild salmon spawning in Fall Creek. So please come and visit us and talk to us and help us out in the kinds of things we're trying to do.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Bruce McIntosh, Deputy Fish Division Administrator at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. One of my duties is to oversee the Hatchery Research Center for the department, and I sit on the board as their non-voting member. I hope you can see from today's testimony that the OHRC has a very engaged board and a very engaged public. And that's a good thing. In addition, the board and the center are focused on the research and the outcomes that address the management needs the center was built to address. I believe that was your intent with the passage and implementation of House Bill 3441. The department fully supports the board and the direction they've put forth in their management plan. All that remains is to find the funding to implement the research. We'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. As I told Representative Krieger at the Salmon Summit this past fall, any doubts the department had about the legislation is long gone. We have embraced the board. We have enjoyed working with them. I think the synergy, I think the legislature intended to come out of this has happened. Some of the members of the board that may have been our biggest critics in the past are now our biggest proponents. That's real progress to me. And if we can get a little smidgen of funding, maybe we'll have a revolution. So with that, I'll leave you to the rest of your speakers. Be glad to answer any questions.
Gentlemen, thank you so very, very much. Any questions or comments for this panel? Vice Chair Krieger?
I usually ask Bruce a question regarding ORS statutes. I'll refrain from doing that.
Gentlemen, thank you for your testimony, and we will we'll do our best to try and assist you in getting the funds necessary to enable this world-renowned research to continue. Thank you all very much.
Chair, can I add just one thing for the record?
Yes.
I'd love the Wild Steelheaders Initiative is a project of Trout Unlimited. We're hosting a Wild Steelhead Science for Anglers on June 27th at Oregon State University. Hope to see many of you there if that's this discussion today has piqued your interest. June 27th at 2 o'clock, Barnum Lodge at the Odd Fellows Hall.
Thank you very much for that invite. With that, I'd like to invite up Joe Rollator and any other member of the public who has anything that any comments that they would like to make.
I've just got about 30 seconds worth of comments to make. My name's Joe Rollator, for the record. I've called on this committee a couple of times before to do things that aren't really in the purvey of this committee, and you've helped us avoid the train wreck with ODF&W's fee increase. You've helped us put together a bill, House Bill 2402, to look at the long-term funding of ODF&W. And now I'm going to ask you to help us pass 3012. It's the funding for the research that you've heard about today. It's funded with a 4 cent per pound ad valorem fee on commercial salmon and a $1 surcharge on a recreational license. And I hope you'll talk to your caucuses and amongst your colleagues and help us with this. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Chairman Witt and committee, James Wright, Salmon for Oregon. Representative Witt, Joe and Stan and I and you sat at a meeting with Michael Banks almost 2 years ago.
Yes.
Michael Banks is one of the world-class, is a world-class geneticist. He has world-class facilities. And as co-chair Lindsey Ball mentioned, a geneticist position being created. I'm hoping we're not doubling up here. And I just kind of wanted to remind everybody that Michael Banks is there, and I'm hoping that this is in conjunction with instead of overlapping as far as genetics work. I feel my personal opinion is genetics work is very important in the science of salmon, and it will really help us clear up the picture with the work that Cam and his committee are doing and David Noakes is doing. I think genetics is a big part of that, and I know that Michael and Dr. Noakes work well together, and I'm just hoping that we're not doubling up resources that can be in conjunction with and not overlapping. Those are my comments. Thank you.
James, thank you very, very much. Any questions or comments, committee members?
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much for your support. With that, I'm going to close the informational hearing on the Hatchery Research Center. Mr. Gallagher, Thursday we have...
Thursday we're going to have an informational session on sage grouse and issues surrounding the listing issue.
Very good, and that one promises to be every bit as good as the other informational hearings we've had. I want to thank everyone for your participation today in making this just an informational hearing of the utmost interest. Thank you all for that. Anyone interested in the attending the Sportsman's Caucus shoot tomorrow night should see Representative Esquivel. Anything else for the good of the order? We stand adjourned. Thank you all very much.
I'm sorry I couldn't.
Very much.
I'm sorry I couldn't.
Adjourned. Thank you all.